You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome, everybody. And I am Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. We have some breaking news this hour. A prosecutor handpicked by Donald Trump after pushing out the prosecutor in the Eastern District of Virginia's U.S. Attorney's Office. With no experience in prosecuting cases, this is Lindsay Halligan, has secured an indictment of New York's Attorney General Letitia James after the president pressured Justice Department officials to charge her, according to four people familiar with the matter, as reported by the New York Times just moments ago. The targeting of Attorney General James, a New York Democrat who, as you will all recall, brought a civil case against Donald Trump, comes just 2 weeks after the same handpicked, completely inexperienced prosecutor, Lindsay Halligan, indicted Jim Comey, the former FBI director, on charges he lied to Congress. James Comey pleaded not guilty this past Wednesday, and his attorneys accused Ms. Halligan of vindictive and selective prosecution. We're going to talk about this in just a few minutes on this program in light of reporting just last evening by the Wall Street Journal that indeed, remember that Truth Social post to Attorney General Bondi that looked like it was supposed to be a direct message, a private message to Pam Bondi? The Wall Street Journal reported yesterday that indeed that was intended to be a direct message to Pam Bondi. We're going to talk about what selective prosecution actually is. We're going to take your calls this afternoon. In other breaking news today, an off-duty Milwaukee police officer has shot and killed a man after an altercation after the two men were involved in a minor traffic crash, as confirmed by Milwaukee Police Chief Jeffrey Norman earlier this afternoon. The shooting happened on West Mill Road near 47th Street at about 8:30 a.m. Again, this happened this morning. Chief Norman said that after the crash, both men exited their vehicles. The driver apparently or allegedly drew a gun, hit the off-duty police officer in the face with it, after which the driver and the officer exchanged gunfire. The chief has said that it is unknown who fired first, but that both men fired shots, the officer firing his department-issued gun. He was apparently on his way to work wearing plain clothes when the crash occurred. There was video that circulated widely on social media immediately after the crash showing a man down on the ground in front of the car and another man standing holding a gun. There has been a bit of uproar, and in an interesting twist of fate, the chief was actually before the Common Council's Finance Committee at the time of the shooting, presenting the Milwaukee Police Department's budget. That police officer is 40 years old with 21 years of experience, Chief Norman said. He has been placed on administrative leave during the investigation, which will be handled by West Dallas Police Department. Pretty shocking stuff to lead us off today, everyone. I want to also then pivot and give you all an update on where we stand with respect to the closure of the federal government, the shutdown. We continue on many days into the government shutdown. One fact that I looked up this afternoon, which I thought I would bring to each and every one of you, is the fact that 90% of the federal government's food safety workers are currently furloughed. And we all know that these kinds of folks, these civil servants, are so essential to the health and safety of all of us. This is happening across not just the FDA, but within the EPA, the SEC, and an incredible large swath of government employees. And I just wanted to take this opportunity to remind us all that as the federal government shutdown continues, as the MAGA regime, that controls both houses of Congress, the White House, as well as the Supreme Court, fails to do anything to negotiate in good faith with Democrats over a pending healthcare emergency when the ACA exchanges open on November 1st. As that is going on, it is state and local government public servants that are really stepping up. So in this time where, again, public servants, I think, are constantly vilified, I just wanted to remind you all that there are incredibly good people, the civil servants, the career public servants, especially right now in state and local government, that are out there doing the people's work, trying to keep the wheels on the bus and trying to keep the essential functions going for so very many of us. And lest we forget, Donald Trump has spoken extensively on who is responsible for these closings. So let's collectively refresh our recollection.
If there is a shutdown, I think it would be a tremendously negative mark on the President of the United States. He's the one that has to get people together. I hear the Democrats are going to be blamed and the Republicans are going to be blamed. I actually think the president would be blamed.
Well, if you say who gets fired, it always has to be the top. I mean, problems start from the top and they have to get solved from the top. And the president's the leader and he's got to get everybody in a room and he's got to lead.
If you blame Democrats, if that happens, I would absolutely blame the Democrats.
I heard Boehner before I left say there's no way we're going to close up government. Well, that means the other side just won. Because if you don't have that at least threat, you can't do anything. You can't, and they got nothing. You got to say, we're going to close it. We're going to close it. You got to scare them.
As far as keeping the government open, I think we want to keep the government open. Don't you agree?
But you can't negotiate when your top person said, there's no way we close up government.
Build that wall. Now, the obstructionist Democrats would like us not to do it, but believe me, we have to close down our government. We're building that wall.
And it goes on and on. The point here is that Donald Trump, when convenient for him, of course, blames the top guy, blames the president. And when it's inconvenient for him, he blames other people. But he is the president of the United States. And a listener earlier this week asked me whether or not congressional Republicans, specific Senate Republicans, could engage what is known as the nuclear option to do away with the 60-vote requirement to pass a continuing resolution to fund the U.S. government. And indeed, that is possible for a continuing resolution. Senate Republicans haven't done so. So again, folks, the MAGAs control both houses of Congress. They have well enough members in the Senate to exercise the nuclear option to take away the requirement of 60 votes to pass a continuing resolution with their razor-thin majority in the Senate. They control the White House and the Supreme Court. All that Democrats are asking is that the MAGAs sit down with them in good faith and talk about the fact that the big, brutal bill stripped away the essential tax credit for folks like small business owners, like those that work for small business owners that can't get employer-based health care, farmers, and early retirees, amongst many, many others. Think waiters and waitresses and bartenders and folks that are self-employed, to make sure that these people can continue to afford good quality health care through the ACA exchanges. That is the Democrats' demand. That is the thing that Republicans continue to lie about, obfuscate, and refuse to negotiate in good faith over. And if you don't want to take my word for it, you need only listen to one of the biggest MAGAs in the House of Representatives, Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene. She gets it. Why don't other Republicans take a listen?
It is hurting so many people, Manu, seriously, so many people across the board, no matter how they vote. I'm literally calling it out and saying, let's take off our Democrat jerseys, let's take off our Republican jerseys, and we should do something responsible for the American people and fix this.
We should do something responsible for the American people and fix this. My goodness, when Marjorie Taylor Greene can see the truth and is willing to break ranks with her party because she knows that folks in her districts are going to be incredibly hurt. What's wrong with Mike Johnson? I just don't understand. This is not an enormous demand from Democrats. It's a very narrow one. And folks, remember, the ACA exchanges are opening on November 1st. They will remain open for this enrollment period until January 15th. Now, the reality is that most folks that have obtained health insurance through the ACA exchanges, when they enroll, they can click a button that automatically enrolls them for their same plan the next year. Folks in that bucket, which is the vast majority of enrollees through the ACA exchanges, may not be aware of their premiums doubling or tripling until they get a notice from their insurance carriers towards the very end of the year, during the holiday time. That will be quite the Merry Christmas from Donald Trump and congressional MAGAs. Unbelievable. And I wanted to share this other fact with you as we update everyone on the government shutdown and what is really at stake here. And that is this fact. Amongst all congressional Republicans that make up the Wisconsin Republican Congressional Caucus, that is Brian Steele, Derek Van Orten, Scott Fitzgerald, Glenn Grothman, Tom Tiffany, and Tony Weed, the number of folks whose health care will be at risk, either through the defunding of the Obamacare ACA tax credits or the nearly $1 trillion cuts to Medicaid and Medicare in the big brutal bill, the total number of Wisconsinites whose health care is at risk in those Republican Congress members' districts is northward of 60,000, okay? Those are the people in this state. And if Marjorie Taylor Greene can figure that out for her constituents, what is wrong with Congressman Steele, Van Orten, Fitzgerald, Grothman, Tiffany, and Weed? This is an enormous problem. And again, all we hear day in and day out are MAGAs on national news, like Mike Johnson, continuing to lie to the American people about what's at stake here. This is the greatest abrogation of duty by Congress, aside from their complete inability to check the powers of an out-of-control, power-mad president. But even a blind squirrel finds a nut every once in a while, and it seems that Donald Trump may have stumbled across one. It appears that we have the beginnings of a peace deal in the Israel-Hamas conflict. We're going to discuss that on the other side. Invite you to join all of us, 855-752-4842. Up next, we discuss that peace deal and what comes next in Gaza. 855-752-4842. I'm Maggie Dawn, and you're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Let's talk about the Gaza peace deal. Donald Trump has done what President Joe Biden was unable to do, and that is get at least some semblance of a peace deal between Hamas and Israel on the table and with both sides, at least in preliminary agreement. I want to talk a bit about why and get your thoughts on it. 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. I have my own theories about this, which speak to, I think, one of the weaknesses in the Democratic Party at this point in time. But let's get the basics about the Gaza peace deal out on the table. There are a number of phases, and in the first phase, which arguably is the piece that is most challenging to get the sides to agree to, there are effectively five major elements. The first is all living hostages held by Hamas are to be released. As we understand, there are 48 hostages that are remaining unaccounted for, about 20 of whom are believed to be alive. Trump said in an interview last night with Fox News that the hostages would probably be released on Monday. Secondly, the bodies of hostages who have died are to be handed over at some point in time later. Hamas has indicated that it would take approximately 10 days to locate the bodies of the dead hostages, according to people close to the talks. Third, Israel will release Palestinian prisoners. Once all of these hostages are returned, Israel is expected to release approximately 250 Palestinians who are in Israeli prisons and about 1,700 Palestinians who have been detained in Gaza during the conflict. Precisely who is on that list, that's still being finalized. Hamas specifically has pushed for particularly high-profile prisoners to be released, including Marwan Barghouti, whom Israel jailed over his role in a Palestinian uprising in the early 2000s. Not jailed because of October 7th, but because of a Palestinian uprising. Fourth, the Israel Defense Forces will withdraw from 70% of the Palestinian enclave in Gaza. This deal includes a map of the withdrawal lines, but without exact locations or coordinates. The final lines to which the military may withdraw are still presumed to be under discussion. And fifth, and for folks that are concerned about the ongoing humanitarian crisis in Gaza, and more on that in just a moment, the Rafah crossing with Egypt will be reopened. This will be reopened after the ceasefire comes into effect, and this will facilitate aid deliveries and allow for entry and exit of Palestinians. I think what's interesting here, and again, we're going to get into a conversation of why I think this was possible in this moment, but I don't want us to forget the fact that Israel blocked aid coming into Gaza yesterday. This was the second, basically, a seizure or interception in international waters of aid flotillas. So these are multiple ships trying to reach Gaza with humanitarian aid. The flotillas were also carrying doctors, nurses, journalists, as well as medicine and food supplies. Again, this was the second time in just this week that Israel intercepted these flotillas of aid. This is specifically the Freedom Flotilla Coalition, which is an international network of Palestinian activist groups that organizes civilian, non-military, maritime missions aimed at getting through Israel's blockade, which has also been blocking aid. It is reported that the flotilla's vessels and passengers are safe and had been transferred to an Israeli port and were expected to be deported promptly. Again, this is the second incident this week where aid was intercepted by Israel. There are a lot of videos out there right now circulating on social media that the people, these aid workers, doctors and journalists were strip searched and then zip tied when this occurred. So there are questions. Again, you've got a peace deal announced, and at the same time, Israel is continuing to block this aid in international waters. The Israeli military has no jurisdiction in international waters. So this is quite the moment. And I think there is much to be determined and discussed about whether this peace will hold. And specifically, there is absolutely nothing in terms of details about what sort of governance structure or government will be permitted for Palestinian people to self-govern. So ultimately, the underlying source of this conflict, which is territorial claims, as well as the Palestinian people's claim to self-governance and how that will work in this conflict-ridden area of the world, this deal says virtually nothing about. Do we have peace in name only? Do we simply have a temporary peace? How did we get here and what comes next? We discuss with you next here on this fine program. So stay tuned to the Civic Media Network and join us, 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. Keep it locked. We'll be back with more in just a moment. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. I want to get into the Gaza peace agreement. And I've got some of our conservative friends on the text line already saying, you're not giving Trump any credit. Mark from Sussex, conservative Bob. I literally just said Donald Trump accomplished what Joe Biden could not. And there, he should be given credit for bringing some kind of peace deal to the table. I think a great question to ask all of us, if we're requiring honesty, if my conservative friends Mark and Bob are requiring honesty and candor from me, I would ask you in turn for honesty and candor about the prospects of this peace deal to create a lasting and sustainable peace, and to talk about what is it about Donald Trump and what I think is a fundamental schism and problem within the Democratic Party that made it a near impossibility for Joe Biden to get this done and made it possible for Donald Trump to get done. And if you've got opinions about this, folks, this is one of those complicated topics. The conflict between Israelis and Palestinians goes back to the late 19th century. So, you know, none of us here on the show today are going to solve any of these problems, but what I would hope for us, because I agree with Bob and Mark and everyone who wants the conflict in Gaza to end, that we need to be able to have a really candid conversation about these things, and we need to hold each other accountable to history and to facts and to the reality on the ground. I laid out the basic five elements of the peace deal, the first phase of the peace deal. There's three phases, and that includes all living and dead hostages held by Hamas need to be released back to Israel. Once that is done, Israel will release Palestinian prisoners, upwards of nearly 2,000 Palestinian prisoners. The Israel Defense Forces will have to withdraw from 70% of the enclave. No details on how that's going to happen exactly. No details about how that area is going to be governed after the Israeli Defense Forces are removed. And very importantly, for humanitarian aid efforts, which if we want peace, and I'm going to extend the presumption of good faith to my conservative texters, Bob and Mark, right now, if we want peace, that also means that we do not want a starvation, a famine, that we want and we acknowledge that the Palestinians, the civilians in Gaza, deserve access to aid, and that the United States needs to make sure that that is part of what occurs next. So let's get into this. I wanted to, and I'm not going to hide the ball at all about how or why I think Donald Trump was able to broker the beginnings of a peace deal. This is a ceasefire deal. We had one, recall, earlier this year. We had an earlier ceasefire this year, which went from about mid-January to mid-March. That earlier ceasefire included 8 rounds of hostage and prisoner exchanges. So we've got that happening here too. In addition to, again, the Rafah crossing with Egypt will open and the IDF pulling back from 70% of the enclave, not entirely. So I just want to start the conversation off by saying this. When you look at many of the leaders in the Middle East, including Benjamin Netanyahu himself, many, if not most of these leaders themselves put forward a persona of the strong man, of the aggressor, of the I am not negotiating, very unyielding, very unbending. Donald Trump does that about everything, even though he does flip-flop on things quite frequently. His personality type, I think, translates, is more easy for the various countries and parties that helped facilitate the Gaza peace deal right now. That resonates with them, okay? So I think that was a major motivating factor. The fact that Donald Trump has been so staunchly pro-Israel has made him quite popular in Israel. In fact, Donald Trump's polling numbers in Israel are quite a tick above Bibi Netanyahu's. Those are the preconditions, right? That he's perceived as a strong man by many of the Mideast leaders, including Bibi Netanyahu, that he polls better in Israel than does Netanyahu, and the fact that I think Donald Trump's erraticness is also, in this particular instance, a bit of a leverage creator. Here is the larger question that I want to pose to both some of my conservative listeners and callers want to weigh in, but also my folks that are Democrats, liberals, progressives. Here is the schism in the Democratic Party that I want to speak to that I think made an ailing Joe Biden not in a position to pressure Netanyahu at all. And that is, despite the fact that I don't care what election cycle you're in, pick one, including this past one. Jewish folks here in the United States overwhelmingly vote for Democrats. That is just an electoral fact. The MAGA movement has courted the Jewish American vote because they need to peel votes off anywhere they can. But the fact remains that Jewish Americans vote overwhelmingly, and I'm talking about plus 65%, for Democrats. Despite that reality, Democrats, especially in this past election cycle, and I think Joe Biden being of an older generation in the Democratic Party, were unable to figure out how to condemn the starvation and the famine, to condemn the killing of citizens. In other words, to criticize Bibi Netanyahu, the leader of Israel, while yet supporting Israel, the state, and Jewish people, and the right of Jewish people to have their own nation and country. And I think that you can use this particular foreign policy question as, frankly, as emblematic of this generational larger schism within the Democratic Party. We know here in the state of Wisconsin, there are certain elected leaders that basically said, I don't think anybody should support Biden, and then no one should support Kamala Harris, because they haven't been sharply critical of Prime Minister Netanyahu as those most left progressives thought they should be. And Democrats have not been able to figure out either how to effectively pass the torch from the older generation to the younger generation, or how to communicate effectively to our most left progressive wing and to say, we're going to condemn the way that Netanyahu has chosen to continue the war while still being unequivocal in our support for the state of Israel, the Israeli people, and Jewish people everywhere in the world. And I think that speaks to some of this crisis of identity that has gripped the Democratic Party for quite some time, which is the result of being a big tent party, of wanting to have a pluralistic democracy, of not wanting to impose ideological litmus testing. But in doing so, it led folks, especially the older generation of Democrats who have the historical memory of both World War II as well as the 1948 Palestine War,
and the all of the pain of the 1980s in this region that bring that historical memory to the public policy debate, it made Democrats, I think, unable to have a very clear discussion about this. And frankly, when we talk about ideological litmus testing, that is the purview of the entire MAGA movement. You're either with us or you're against us, and you go on the enemies list. And if you say anything that is not off the talking points, you will be exorcised from our party. We will primary you and you will be done. The Democrats have never operated that way. And yet, in our most progressive wing of the party, the most far left wing of the Democratic Party, that ideological litmus testing was applied to both Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. I think much to the detriment of Kamala Harris's candidacy and the Democratic Party overall. We have never been a party of ideological litmus testing. And if we allow, frankly, the smaller factions of the Democratic Party to impose that sort of ideological litmus testing, we do that at our collective peril. These are my theses for all of you to dissect, disagree with, and engage with this afternoon. 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. Kurt from Madison, you're on the air, sir. Thank you for waiting.
Oh, Maggie, I'll get straight to the point. I hate to be the cynical person here. Netanyahu was a criminal before Hamas attacked Israel. He's now a war criminal. We have Trump, who has never done anything short of motivation to elevate his fragile ego into a higher plateau. His family's talked about capturing land in the Gaza Strait to build a hotel. He's demanding that he should be given, you know, awards. I'm sorry, this just reeks of backdoor closet BS, and I'm betting a dollar out on the table now I'll be right about this. I don't trust Netanyahu, and I don't trust Trump.
Yeah, I understand the cynicism, Kurt from Madison. Thanks for calling. This is why I point out that the quote-unquote peace agreement does not answer the two most fundamental questions that have animated the conflict in Gaza since, I mean, the 19th century. And that is both Israeli and Palestinian rights to self-determination and to self-governance, and how will the territory be divided and governed? This plan doesn't get us there. So we've had ceasefires. We've had prisoner swaps. We had them under Joe Biden. We had them earlier this year. And those did not last. So again, anything that stops the fighting, gets aid into Gaza, I am going to support. But I'm not going to do so through partisan rose-colored glasses. We've got to be able to acknowledge why Joe Biden didn't get it done, why Trump was able to get at least some semblance of this done, and be clear-eyed and talk to each other in good faith about what must come next. And I'll just say this, and then we're going to go back to the phones on the other side. Donald Trump is not a guy that knows nuance or complexity. And it's going to take nuance and complexity to answer the questions of self-determination and territorial governance in Gaza. And we've got a president who's unconcerned with both and more concerned with taking credit, winning the Nobel Prize, and headlines. You can join us. What are your thoughts on this peace deal? 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. I go right to the phones on the other side, so stay with us. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. You want to get your 2 cents in on the Gaza peace deal, give us a call, 855-752-4842. Mark from Prairie du Sac, go ahead, sir.
Yeah, I certainly hope that something comes of this. I'm concerned as well as what's going on in the West Bank with the settlers displacing Palestinians and seizing their homes and driving them out of their lands that they have there. But I mean that Netanyahu blew it, back before October 7th. Apparently, he ignored warnings that there was something going to happen there, and I'm not excusing it because it shouldn't have happened in the first place. The only ones that are responsible for it are the attackers that attacked there. But there was, Netanyahu bears some responsibility by not having forces in place to respond swiftly enough. They're just preventing it in the first place. But it is just, I don't think Trump is actually negotiating any of this. He's actually got professionals over there doing it. Trump just says, do this, and hopefully they're, but I don't think either Witkoff or Jared Kushner actually has the skills actually to bring this to fruition, that hopefully we have somebody there that actually knows what they're doing rather than, Donald Trump, because he's so erratic.
Yeah. Thanks so much for the call, Mark. To boil down what I was saying in sort of the setup to this discussion, I think Biden was weak here. And by weak, I mean unclear and unwilling to chart a course in private, right? The thing that I think gets missed from so much of this is what we see on the public level when it comes to this kind of stuff is just an infinitesimal part of this. Donald Trump ingratiated himself to Netanyahu and the Israeli people. Again, his strongman persona, which belies Donald Trump's actual at-root weakness, his inability to actually grapple with the truth, tell people the truth, and be himself accountable, right? That was part of what worked here for Donald Trump. And we will see if we actually have a lasting peace. Because again, folks, territorial control and governance and the Israeli and Palestinian people's right to self-govern has not been sorted out in this deal. And the reality is that Benjamin Netanyahu has been facing potential criminal charges for corruption in Israel for a long time. It served a lot of Netanyahu's interests to have this war continue. So, what happens next should be the meaningful question if we're all trying to be honest about this. And for Democrats, how do we have a meaningful discussion when we have very differing viewpoints within our party without weakening our candidates to the point, or a president to the point, where they can't effectively negotiate or campaign? Jim from Appleton points out on the text line this: the far left didn't create or employ litmus tests. Well, I kind of disagree with Jim a little bit there. I think the far left does employ litmus tests all the time. But Jim points out something else that I very much agree with him. He says the corporatist wing of the Democratic Party fears loss of power and control of the party. They just do it under the table, like the Republicans used to. And Jim says something else that I agree with, that the far left is as easy to gin up as the MAGA movement. I agree that Democrats have not dealt with the corporatists, and by that I mean the impact of big money donors in their party and in their policy platforms. I thought that was one of the major shortcomings of Kamala Harris's presidency. While Donald Trump, lying to the American public, was able to sell them on one of the greatest cons ever to occur in American politics, which was that he gives a whit about the middle class and working people in this country. He just handed out the biggest tax cut in history to the corporatists, right? To folks with names on buildings that don't have bosses, that have created so much wealth that no one ever in their family will ever have to work again. And that's the Republican Party of bootstraps and hard work. Donald Trump has done nothing but hurt the middle class. And yet he got so many of his supporters to believe that he was genuinely cared about them. The Democrats have to deal with absolutists from the far left, and they've got to pull out of the party from its root all of those within the party that will capitulate to big money donors and to the corporatists. Nobody wants to see any more corporate welfare. these companies don't need more tax cuts. We don't need more stock buybacks. We don't need more Elon Musks or Jeff Bezos's or George Soros's. We need more support for the middle class, a tax code that is fair, that actually rewards work. Keep in mind, everyone, as I sit here today with each and every one of you, we tax the same dollar differently if it's created from work. It gets taxed way more than the dollar that is created by wealth and sitting on your butt and doing nothing. Fundamentally, that is the problem that Democrats and Republicans of good faith need to confront. We're going to take a breath. We got an incredible guest coming up next to help us understand what is going on with the National Guard. We've got Professor Josh Braver from the UW Law School to help us understand the interaction of civil law enforcement and the National Guard and the military and the, quote, warrior ethos that we hear talked about so much. Don't go anywhere. I'm Maggie Dawn, and this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.